Good morning. This is your U.S. and World News briefing for Saturday, June 6, 2026. We begin today with breaking news of a dangerous military escalation between the United States and Iran. Multiple sources report that Iranian forces launched drones and missiles targeting U.S. warships in the Gulf of Oman yesterday, prompting immediate American retaliation against Iranian radar sites. According to Reuters and Al Jazeera, Iran then expanded its response by firing missiles at U.S. military bases in Kuwait and Bahrain, with both countries reporting intercepted drones and air raid sirens sounding. The U.S. military, through Central Command, confirms shooting down at least four Iranian one-way attack drones heading toward the Strait of Hormuz, which they characterized as posing an imminent threat to maritime traffic. This represents the most direct military confrontation between the two nations since the conflict began over 3 months ago, and it comes at a particularly volatile moment. PBS reports that the Strait of Hormuz remains largely closed to commercial shipping, already straining global energy markets, and this latest exchange threatens whatever fragile understanding existed. The timing is notable because NPR reports the Trump administration has claimed negotiations with Iran are going quite well, creating a stark disconnect between diplomatic rhetoric and military reality on the ground. Turning to Capitol Hill, we're seeing an unusual display of Republican defiance against President Trump. The House of Representatives passed legislation supporting Ukraine aid, with 18 House Republicans voting against their own party leadership to side with Democrats, according to Time magazine. This is significant because it represents one of the clearest rebukes of Trump's foreign policy preferences from within his own party during his second term. The bill still requires Senate approval, but its passage through the House marks what Time calls a significant show of defiance. Separately, seven House Republicans also voted with Democrats in an attempt to block Trump's controversial White House ballroom project, which involved demolishing part of the East Wing last year. These votes suggest growing willingness among some Republicans to break from Trump on specific issues, even as the party largely remains aligned with him overall. President Trump announced Friday that he wants his newly appointed Acting Director of National Intelligence, Bill Pult, to conduct sweeping staff cuts across the intelligence community. According to PBS and Fox News, Trump explicitly told the Wall Street Journal he's given Pult the green light to fire intelligence officials and reduce the size of all 18 intelligence agencies. This continues a pattern of dramatic restructuring within the intelligence apparatus that's been ongoing throughout Trump's second term. The Office of the Director of National Intelligence has already been significantly scaled back, and these new directives would extend those cuts much further. Critics worry about the impact on national security capabilities, while supporters argue the intelligence community has grown too large and politicized. The move comes as Trump also confirmed that the Justice Department's nearly $2 billion anti-weaponization fund will not continue, according to a court filing reported by The Hill. In a major development for artificial intelligence policy, Trump told reporters Friday that his administration is exploring the possibility of the U.S. government taking equity stakes in major AI companies. According to the Financial Times and CNBC, Trump said his team will look into making AI firms like OpenAI and Anthropic into partnerships, adding it would be a beautiful thing. This represents a dramatic potential shift in how the government relates to the technology sector. Sources tell CNBC that OpenAI CEO Sam Altman first shared this idea with the Trump administration in 2025. The timing is interesting because it comes just as Anthropic has released a major policy paper calling for a global pause on advanced AI development, warning that systems could soon begin improving themselves faster than humans can control. Fortune notes the unusual political alignment here, with Trump appearing to agree with progressive voices like Bernie Sanders on the concept of partial government ownership of critical technology infrastructure, even as many in his MAGA base remain skeptical of AI. The U.S. economy added 172,000 jobs in May, according to the Labor Department's latest report released Friday. NPR reports this marks the third consecutive month of job gains, with the unemployment rate holding steady at 4.3%. However, the news isn't entirely positive. Wage growth has softened and likely failed to keep pace with rising prices, driven partly by the Iran conflict's impact on fuel costs. PBS notes this job surge is somewhat surprising given economic strain from the war, with many economists having predicted weaker numbers. The strong employment data is already affecting financial markets. Reuters reports that investors are now increasing their bets on potential Federal Reserve interest rate increases, and the stock market reacted negatively. The S&P 500 fell more than 2.6% on Friday, its worst one-day drop of the year, ending 9 consecutive weeks of gains. Technology stocks led the decline, with the Nasdaq tumbling 4%, according to the Financial Times. In what could become a significant precedent, New York State lawmakers have passed a one-year moratorium on new large data centers, according to The Verge. If Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul signs it, this would be the first statewide ban of its kind. The legislation comes amid growing backlash against the environmental and infrastructure impacts of the AI boom, which requires massive computing facilities. Separately, The Guardian reports that Seattle's city government is on the verge of passing a similar year-long ban on new data center construction, which would be particularly notable given that Seattle is home to both Amazon and Microsoft. Meanwhile, voters in Monterey Park, California, have already overwhelmingly approved a permanent ban on data centers, marking the first time U.S. residents have directly voted on such restrictions. These moves reflect mounting local resistance to the physical footprint of AI development, even as the federal government considers deeper involvement in the industry. The Senate passed a $70 billion immigration enforcement funding bill after an overnight vote, PBS reports in its news wrap. The legislation, passed by Senate Republicans, significantly increases resources for immigration enforcement operations. This comes as a federal judge in California struck down Trump administration policies that had targeted immigrants from 39 countries, according to Reuters and Al Jazeera. The judge ruled that these restrictions placed lives in what he called indeterminate legal limbo and were motivated by anti-immigrant sentiment. Meanwhile, The Hill reports that a federal prosecutor in California has opened multiple election fraud probes after Trump accused Democrats of cheating in this week's primary elections, marking a potentially significant escalation in post-election legal battles. A ProPublica investigation is drawing attention to a $620 million federal loan to a firm with ties to Donald Trump Jr. According to their reporting, lawmakers from both parties are demanding answers about why the White House initiated this loan and what the relationship between the firm and the Trump family entails. The story adds to ongoing concerns about potential conflicts of interest and the blending of business and political interests within the administration. Separately, former Attorney General Pam Bondi's replacement is facing a difficult confirmation battle, according to Fox News. Todd Blanche, Trump's nominee for Attorney General, is dealing with what the network calls Epstein baggage, related to his oversight of certain case files during his previous tenure. Turning to international news, Russian President Vladimir Putin has rejected Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's request for face-to-face talks, according to multiple sources including the BBC, Reuters, and NPR. Putin told an economic forum in St. Petersburg that he currently sees no point in meeting with Zelensky. This comes after Zelensky issued an open letter calling for direct negotiations to end the war. Al Jazeera reports that Zelensky responded by accusing Putin of choosing war over peace, a characterization that underscores the diplomatic impasse. However, there may be some pressure building on Russia's position. Fortune magazine reports that Russia is running low on funds to sustain its war effort, with occupied Crimea experiencing fuel shortages as Ukrainian forces successfully target supply lines. The publication notes that Russian casualties have reached staggering heights, while recruitment of replacement troops has slowed significantly. In a major diplomatic development, Chinese President Xi Jinping will travel to North Korea next week for his first visit since 2019, according to announcements from both countries reported by NPR and the BBC. The timing is significant because it comes just one day after North Korea unveiled a new facility to produce nuclear fuel, according to NPR. The BBC notes that Xi's visit follows recent meetings with both US and Russian leaders, two countries that loom large over North Korean foreign policy. This appears to be China reasserting its influence on the Korean Peninsula at a moment of heightened nuclear tensions. Deutsche Welle reports that North Korea has been quietly ramping up its nuclear weapons program while Washington's attention has been focused elsewhere, particularly on Iran and Ukraine. The conflict in Lebanon continues to deteriorate despite ceasefire announcements. Al Jazeera asks directly in its coverage whether the latest U.S. ceasefire deal for Lebanon is meaningless, noting that Israel and Hezbollah continue fighting after the truce was supposedly agreed. The United Nations reports that 1.4 million people now need humanitarian aid in Lebanon amid Israel's ongoing attacks. Reuters reports that Iran has declared its support for Hezbollah, effectively putting a wider regional peace deal in doubt. The Intercept has been particularly critical of media coverage here, publishing a piece titled "Stop Calling It a Ceasefire," that argues too many mainstream outlets accept ceasefire claims at face value, even as military operations continue. Separately, The Guardian reports that Israel is emptying Lebanon of its people through what some analysts characterize as a deliberate strategy of population displacement, similar to tactics used in Gaza and the West Bank. A significant diplomatic tension has emerged between the United States and the United Kingdom. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer has suggested that the U.S. is trying to interfere in our democracy after Vice President J.D. Vance and other American officials used the murder of British teenager Henry Nowak to push anti-immigration messaging, according to The Guardian and Sky News. Vance called for righteous anger and blamed the murder on mass migration policies. Downing Street pushed back strongly, with officials saying they don't recognize the characterization of Britain having a two-tier criminal justice system. The Guardian reports that the U.S. State Department has been leading what it describes as an incendiary charge of American officials using the case to advance far-right ideas about migration causing civilizational decline. Starmer's office responded by hitting out at people seeking to stir division. And Time magazine notes that the British Justice Secretary explicitly rejected U.S. criticisms of U.K. policing. This represents an unusually public rift between the two close allies. France has opened a war crimes investigation into Israel's treatment of activists who participated in a Gaza-bound aid flotilla, Al Jazeera reports. French activists involved are accusing Israeli forces of abuse and torture. This adds to mounting international legal pressure on Israel. In another case with international intrigue, two Romanian men have been convicted in the UK of stabbing journalist Puria Zerati on behalf of Iran, according to the BBC and The Guardian. Zerati works for Iran International TV, which is critical of the Iranian government. He was stabbed three times in the leg outside his London home in what prosecutors described as an attempt to silence him. The case, as The Telegraph reported earlier, exposed Iran's use of criminal proxies to conduct operations on British soil. The Centers for Disease Control has issued an urgent warning about an Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo and Uganda. NPR reports that new CDC modeling shows that without immediate intervention, this outbreak could sicken more than 20,000 people in the next 3 months, potentially rivaling the worst Ebola outbreaks on record. The Intercept has published a critical piece arguing that the Trump administration is trying to shift blame for its response after cutting support for frontline healthcare workers in Central Africa. The timing is concerning because Fortune notes that as the World Cup draws millions of visitors to 11 U.S. cities, measles, not Ebola, may actually be the bigger public health concern, partly because measles is more contagious and U.S. cases are already rising. Let me pause here for our analysis corner, where we examine how different outlets are framing the same story. The U.S.-Iran military escalation offers a particularly stark example of competing narratives. Al Jazeera's coverage emphasizes what it calls a U.S.-Iran clash and leads with Iranian missile attacks as a response to American actions. Reuters, meanwhile, frames the story as U.S. attacks Iranian sites after Iran launches drones, placing American retaliation as the primary action in its headline. The BBC takes a more neutral approach, calling it an exchange of strikes. But The Intercept goes further, publishing an analysis piece that directly challenges mainstream media framing, titled "Stop Calling It a Ceasefire." The Intercept argues that outlets have been too willing to accept administration claims of a ceasefire between the US, Israel, and Iran, even as military actions continue regularly. They ask pointedly, how many acts of war must occur before the mainstream media accepts there is no ceasefire? This is important because it highlights how terminology shapes public understanding. If audiences believe there's a ceasefire in place, these military exchanges seem like violations or exceptions. If there's no actual ceasefire, they're simply continuation of an ongoing conflict. As news consumers, it's worth noting when outlets use passive framing like clashes versus active framing that identifies who initiated what action. On the AI governance front, we're seeing what might be called Anthropic's contradiction problem. The company just released a major blog post and policy paper calling for a global pause on frontier AI development, warning that AI systems could soon start recursively self-improving beyond human control. Anthropic co-founder Jack Clark told the BBC that AI could reach a point where it develops without human input, and the company is urging policymakers to establish systems for deciding when to pause work. But as one Reddit user pointed out, Anthropic is simultaneously preparing for a massive IPO that could value the company at over $1 trillion. Bloomberg reports that Apollo just wrapped up $35 billion in debt financing to buy AI chips for Anthropic. So we have a company saying, we should all slow down because this is dangerous, while also racing to raise unprecedented amounts of capital for development. Different outlets are handling this differently. The Guardian presents Anthropic's pause proposal straightforwardly as a responsible safety measure. Business Insider and Fortune note the contradiction, but frame it as Trump potentially agreeing with progressive voices on government involvement. The Verge and Wired focus on the biological weapons aspect, noting that Anthropic joined with OpenAI and other rivals in calling for stronger protections against AI-aided bioweapons. What's notable is that very few mainstream outlets are directly questioning whether a company can simultaneously call for a pause while pursuing aggressive expansion. That critical framing is mostly appearing in tech-focused forums and social media rather than traditional news sources. Now for some quick hits on other stories worth knowing about. SpaceX has announced what could become the largest initial public offering in history, with plans to raise up to $75 billion and achieve a market valuation of $1.77 trillion, according to The Guardian and multiple financial outlets. Google has signed a $30 billion deal with SpaceX to provide AI computing power, paying $920 million per month for 32 months, according to CNBC and The New York Times. The UK Labour Party is navigating internal dynamics as Andy Burnham, preparing for a potential leadership bid, has called for nationalising Thames Water and reviewing the recent national insurance contributions increase. A US journalist has pleaded guilty to working as an unregistered agent for China, the BBC reports, with Thomas Weir Pawkin, the second, admitting he knowingly worked with Chinese government employees for years. And in legal news, Fox News and Dominion Voting Systems reached a settlement in their defamation case, with Fox paying more than $787 million and acknowledging that some on-air claims about Dominion were false. That's your briefing for today. We've covered a dangerous military escalation in the Gulf, growing Republican defiance of Trump on specific issues, major AI policy proposals from both government and industry, international diplomatic tensions from Ukraine to the UK, and significant developments in technology, health, and finance. As always, remember that how stories are framed matters as much as the facts being reported. Stay informed, stay critical, and we'll see you tomorrow.